Good morning, everyone. This is Amy Lemley with the John Burton Foundation, and welcome to today's web seminar slash conference call. We call it a conference call because it's what it was for several years before we started getting a lot of people on it, and we found that it was kind of technically more challenging and that there were advantages of doing it in this format. So thank you all for being here. For those of you who are new to this, we do it on the second Thursday of every month, and the idea is to bring together both counties as well as providers who are working on the issue, on the programs of THP Plus or THP Plus foster care. So welcome today. And just want to give you a word. If you're hearing something that sounds kind of like a, for example, fire alarm notice in the background, that's because our 24-floor building decided to conduct a fire alarm drill this morning at the exact same time as our conference call. So no worries, we're all safe up here up on the 11th floor, and but you may hear that in the background as we have today's conference call. So let's get right into it and review what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to start today's conversation with THP Plus foster care. We're going to update you on the providers. Simone's done a great map of where all of the THP Plus foster care housing is, and then we're going to look at how many young people are in THP Plus foster care. Again, the goal is to bring this placement to the fore and make it a viable alternative for young people participating in extended foster care in California. Then we're going to turn our attention, more of our time today is going to be spent on THP Plus, specifically an issue that has been brought to our attention repeatedly, which is my program is not getting referrals. I have empty beds in my THP Plus program. What's going on? And so we're going to discuss that a little bit. We're going to give some information about what the kind of reasons behind that are, kind of in the short term and the long term. And then we're very pleased to have Luis Madrid of Aspirinet, who is a THP Plus, longstanding THP Plus provider, who will be on the call to share some of the approaches on the ground that he and Aspirinet are using to ensure that there is that the full capacity of the program is being utilized. Now, that's important for a number of reasons. I mean, most seriously, because we have young people in need, but equally because in the era, in the kind of context of realignment, this lack of utilization can be confused with the lack of demand. So we're going to get more into that in a few minutes, and want to thank Luis for being on this. He is always the first one to volunteer and on so many fronts, and so thank you, Luis. And then we'll touch on a few other items, and we'll wrap up. And we should certainly be done by 11 o'clock. So with this, I'm going to hand it over to Simone to give you the latest on THP Plus foster care.
Thanks, Amy. Just waiting for this slide to turn over here. All right. So as you can see, and as we've discussed in the past, THP Plus foster care was first available in October of 2012, and it has steadily grown over the past year. We are now at 35 providers who are licensed and have received a rate and can accept youth. So that's great. We've definitely seen steady growth, as you can see on the graph there, but we definitely do want to see continued growth over the next year. Amy, do you want to advance the slide? And you can also see on this slide kind of where our capacity is. I know this is a bit crowded, the slide here, but what this is a kind of a map of where THP Plus foster care providers have housing located, have THP Plus foster care housing located. And so the numbers you see for the black counties are the one that would indicate that there is one provider either that has housing in that county or is licensed to provide housing in that county. The way that some providers are working is as youth are identifying housing, they're setting up a remote site in that county. So some of these providers may operate a number of counties that are close by to one another, and they may not actually have, you know, obviously a single site set up in those counties, but they do accommodate youth as they identify their housing in that county. And so as you can see, some of these, most of these are, you see a one or maybe a two. There are a few counties that have larger numbers, as you can see, and I just actually noticed a mistake. Ventura should not be six, so that should actually be, I believe, one or two. So apologies for that mistake. Oh, you know what it is, Los Angeles and Ventura need to switch. So Los Angeles should have the six, and Ventura should have the two, so my apologies. And what the color, the red and the blue, what those are counties that have a high number of non-minor dependents in them. And so the blue counties are obviously those counties with the high number of non-minor dependents that do have a provider or providers operating THP plus foster care there. And the two red counties you see, Sacramento and San Bernardino, are counties that have high number of non-minor dependents but do not yet have operational THP plus foster care housing located there. I know that, you know, they're working towards it, and I know that there are providers geared up and I believe ready to launch in those counties or expand to those counties, and hopefully we'll see that very soon. And Amy, why don't you advance the next slide? And here you can see, and many of you have seen this kind of setup here before. We've visited this before. This just shows where youth are placed that are not minor dependents. So we talked about THP plus foster care. You know, it's grown steadily, but unfortunately, it's still it's just a fraction of where non-minor dependents are being placed in California. And so, as you can see, the SILP, the Supervised Independent Living Placement, is the kind of, it's the placement. It's where youth are going. And what this means is that, you know, those youth in California, they're not receiving the supportive services that they would receive, for example, in a THP plus foster care placement. And so we would really like to see THP plus foster care grow. Right now, it's, you know, the SILP has 6.5 times more youth than THP plus foster care has. And that's pretty considerable. So we definitely want to see this graph kind of even out a little bit. But that's where, this is where we are today, or as of July 1st, 2013.
Thanks, Simone. There's just a question or two about the map, if we could revisit that for a moment. The alarm has stopped, so we can speak with a little bit more calm. Hopefully it's not making it through, but it makes it a little bit hard to hear yourself. So the question, Simone, is these numbers. These are the number of programs certified by this county. What are those numbers again? Can you just kind of explain that again?
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that. So what these numbers are how many providers, how many THP plus foster care providers can operate or are operating in those counties. So having, you know, we know that there's not, you know, contracts existing like there is for THP plus in these counties, but there is a presence. So, for example, in Del Norte at the top, you see a one. So that means there's one THP plus foster care provider that has housing, THP plus foster care housing located in Del Norte County. And so if you see a two, that means there are two providers operating in that county. And like I said, it's not black and white. It's a little more fluid than with, you know, THP plus. Some providers are operating in a region. Like you have Environmental Alternatives, or you have Aspirinet, you have First Place for Youth. You have these providers that are operating in multiple counties, and they may be operating in even just a particular region. And so, as we know, the way that the licenses work, state licenses, is that it licenses you for a region. There's a certain mile radius that your housing must be located near your administrative office. And so if you're licensed in that region, you can technically, you know, place youth in that region. And so some of these providers are just choosing to place youth in one county, and that's really the county and the community they operate in. And then some that are larger will actually cover, you know, a whole region. And so they may have remote sites with THP plus foster care located in, you know, three neighboring counties. And so if you see accounts you mentioned here doesn't mean that there's a plethora of necessary placement availability. It doesn't mean that there's a single site there, but that there's a provider covering that area. There may be one or two even just remote sites located in that county. They may have a single site there. So that's all that this map is showing you.
Thanks, Simone. I think I'd like to add that the dimension that this map adds that is unique from just a list of licensed PHP Plus providers, the list that's created when a provider becomes licensed is does not reflect where all of the housing is located. So we're hoping something that is more place-based in terms of explaining where the housing is actually located can be a resource for child welfare workers who maybe are working with young people who maybe the young person wants to go to college at Chico State and they're wondering, wow, is there a provider? Could they be in THP Plus? Rather than having to call a number of providers, this information is available on the website by county. It's not just this graphic representation. So thanks, Simone. So from here, we're going to go on to, I think, the bulk of the conversation, which is, why are referrals slowing in my county's THP Plus program? And, you know, here we have a really interesting position in that we talked to a lot of different providers and a lot of different county representatives, and we started hearing this about 6 or 7 months ago. Where are the referrals? Where are the youth? Maybe this program isn't necessary anymore. What's going on? We've usually had a waiting list, and now we actually have open capacity. And so we're going to talk about what is going on. And the number one thing that is going on can be explained in this next graph. So you see in this graph, this is the number of youth who have aged out annually for each of the years, 2006 through 2012, and that's January to December. So, you know, we historically have had between, 4 to 5,000. You can see in 2009, we had around almost 5,700 youth who exited due to age. And this is information that the state case management system collects. We're very fortunate to have such a great system that is archived. I mean, I know it has its shortcomings, but when you talk to people in other states, the accessibility of this information is very important. And then you'll see when we were doing advocacy on behalf of AB 12, there was research that was indicating that the number of youth aging out of care would decline slightly, and I think it's interesting. We do see that number begin to decrease slightly in 2010. And then you see 2011, there's a slight decrease. But the dramatic change happens with the implementation of AB 12. So in 1 year, we had a radical 40% reduction in the number of youth aging out of care. And the explanation for that is quite straightforward. We have seen an extremely high uptake rate among youth at age 18, higher even than were included in the estimates in AB 12. And that is exciting, and we are very, very excited to see that. And yet the product of it, or the effect of it, I should say, is that for many THP Plus providers around the state who had historically gotten referrals from youth aging out of care, those referrals very quickly dried up. Instead of having young people, on a weekly basis aging out of care and turning to THP Plus, we've had a large cohort of young people who are instead saying, you know what, I like my foster family, I like this SILP option, I like where I'm at, and I frankly don't want to change, and I may need THP Plus at age 21, but right now I'm happy where I am. So what you see is the first young person who was age 18 will be age 21. The first cohort that has gone fully through extended foster care will begin to age out in 2015. And so where we're at right now as a program, we're in a lull where young people who would have aged out have extended into care, and they haven't aged out at the new age, which is age 21. And so what we're experiencing is this somewhat, you know, it's an artifact of the implementation of AB 12. Unfortunately, this artifact, you know, this momentary lapse in youth aging out of foster care in some areas is being confused with, well, I guess young people don't need the program, when in reality, the young people are still in extended foster care, and we really don't know how many young people will need the program when they turn age 21. And so the challenge here is to sustain the programs until 2015, to not let this temporary lull in demand send the message that the program is not important on a county level. And so how can we do that? Well, we can do that by maintaining capacity of the programs. And so one thing we're seeing in the program is the following. So this reduction in the number of youth aging out has really had quite a significant impact on who is accessing THP Plus. And those of you who read the annual report know this information, but just to highlight it. So if youth who are 18 are not transitioning into THP Plus, who is in the program? How has it changed? And we see a number of characteristics. We're clearly serving older young people. A quite significant change, up from just 31% were age 21 to 24 to now almost half are. So that is a very considerable increase. We've also seen a big increase in custodial mothers. It used to be about 1 in 3. Now it is 2 out of 5. And that is another change. And then we're also seeing young people who have experienced homelessness, who are entering directly from homelessness. So 1 in 4 young people in a post-extended foster care era are now coming straight off the street into your THP Plus program. And the number who are coming directly from foster care has changed even more dramatically. It used to be 1 in 3 young people, about, a little under that, came directly from their placement into your program. And that has gone all the way down to 14%. So again, this really says, it gives you in some ways a preview of who is out there that needs to be served, and the need to really, in this era of implementation of extended foster care, we need to dramatically change our outreach strategy if we're going to sustain our programs in the interim until the cohort of young people who turn 21 do so in 2015. So just to kind of to raise the point, you know, because it's certainly been raised, well, maybe they're just not out there. Maybe we have served everyone. They have gotten, you know, some have participated in extended foster care, and maybe we just don't need this capacity anymore. So I want to turn your attention to this slide, and what you can see is in 2013, so this is a snapshot, in 2013, a little over 2,000 young people were served by THP Plus. However, you know, while the program is spectacular and doing really amazing stuff on the local level, we are still, as a program, serving a very small fraction of the eligible youth. So the eligible youth in this chart are youth who exited due to age, and that's, you know, a requirement of THP Plus. It's not the CHAPE eligibility, but the much more narrow eligibility of aged out of foster care, and these are the number of young people who are age 18 to 24. Now, we know many of these young people, you know, they're going to go on and do great things and may not need our programs. So even using the most conservative estimate from the Midwest study, we know over 10,000 young people in 2013 will likely experience homelessness within that larger category of eligible youth. So in case we're having a conversation locally, like, well, you know, we have this capacity, we don't have a wait list anymore, maybe the problem has gone away. The problem is still there, but the problem looks different. The problem is no longer youth who are aging directly out of care. Instead, it's youth who have been out of care. It's those parenting youth, it's those currently homeless youth, and it's the older youth. And so the conversation that Luis is going to, we're going to have with Luis is how do we adapt in this interim period our outreach strategies to reach those young people and to keep our programs full and to not see funds directed away from the program in the era of realignment and used for other purposes, but instead to really see them remain with THP Plus program to serve these very high need young people. What are the new creative outreach strategies we can bring to this program to keep our programs full? And how can we maintain our housing census till January 1st, 2005? Because having a program with empty beds is not a very compelling argument for growing your program or even maintaining your program. And so if we as a state really want to do that, maintain the $35 million we've all fought so hard to put towards THP Plus, we need to keep our programs full and we need to keep them brimming. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Luis, and thank you very much, Luis, for joining us. Luis is with Aspirinet, a fabulous organization and over 40 organizations around the state. I'm going to let him share a little bit about Aspirinet and then talk about the approach that Aspirinet has taken in these times of a 40% reduction in youth aging out of foster care, how their Merced program has maintained its capacity and stayed strong. So thank you, Luis, for being with us.
Sure, Amy. It's always my pleasure. So you kind of already cover a whole lot, but just kind of overall on as far as Aspirinet goes, I mean, we're, as far as THP Plus goes, we're providing THP Plus services from Southern California all the way up to Stockton, I believe. So we have, you know, quite a numerous of contracts. I personally oversee the Merced and the Spanish Law THP contract. So my focus is going to be mainly on Merced, but I'll also talk a little bit about, you know, about Spanish Law and what we're doing there as well. Talking to Simone a couple of days ago, we were talking about how I was sharing with her how, you know, in our Merced office, we're actually technically over our capacity. So she was mentioning how a lot of providers were having issues with really keeping their programs at capacity. And, she asked if I could kind of share a little bit of what we've been doing so that, you know, I guess people could, see that there, it is possible to still maintain a capacity. So I have a list here that I want to go through real quick. I mean, it's nothing, you know, I think that you guys are probably already doing, and if not, I hope that you guys can use it. But the first thing that I had here was, I really just wanted to make that point that Amy, made, that we need to understand that we're all feeling it, not thinking that, oh, maybe it's just, my county or maybe it's just this. We're all feeling it one way or the other, either because our wait list was shrunken, the pool to select from has really shrunk, or we're simply just not getting any referrals or don't even have a wait list. So definitely just kind of acknowledging that you're not the only one. We're all feeling it. The uncertainty, obviously, it's not a good feeling because, you're always with the concern of, like, what if it goes away? What is this going to be like this permanently? So definitely the ball game has changed. And I'll share with you some of the things that we've done. I think the first thing that I have here, probably the most important for us, has been our internal strategizing. We have to watch that we can kind of keep our arms crossed and say, this is just because of Baby 12. There's really nothing that we can do. Or we can act as an agency and say, look, the ball has changed. The ball game has changed. What are we going to do differently to make it happen? So it's really, been nice to see how our management has really come together and figured out, okay, what are we going to do about it? Are we just going to let it collapse, or are we going to, you know, do something? So that's going to look a little bit different, you know, for, you know, every agency, for every county. So that was just kind of my first, you know, thing. I don't know how that will look with your agency, but really coming together and, you know, we're drafting, like, like plans of action, you know, where certain officers are not meeting, you know, their numbers. And then the second one that I have, which is outside of the agency, I mean, it's so critical, is that relationship with your county and with IOP. Most of our referrals, I want to say maybe about 99% of my referrals that are coming from Merced are coming, you know, from the county IOP people or the social workers. And, you know, it's just extremely vital that you have a strong relationship with them. And some of the things that we do to have that relationship with them is that we're meeting with them, or I meet with them, you know, ongoing at a minimum once a month, but I'm seeing them out in the community more often because we're part of boards together, we're part of, you know, events. Like, for instance, they're having an event Saturday, and, you know, me and one of my staff are going to go and help them out to kind of nurture those relationships. One of the big things that they did for us recently is that we're having them go into, if you're familiar with child welfare, you know, they have a couple of databases that we've used to our advantage to try to identify youth who are THP plus eligible, but we don't have an application for. So you have, for instance, CWSCMS, which is the child welfare database. They're using C4, which is another database that's critical because a lot of our youth are getting food stamps or Medi-Cal, and we're able to locate them there. You know, so just yesterday I got a list of, like, it had a lot of youth names. So what we'll do now is we'll say, hey, look, we got this list from the county, and they, you know, they identified you as THP plus eligible. You know, do you know about the program? You know, what's your housing condition right now? And, you know, from there, get some referrals.
Luisa, can I ask a question about that?
Yes.
Just so this is young people who are, you know, are not transitioning directly. This is working with ILP to ID older youth who are receiving other public benefits. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm, yeah, because a lot of the youth that, you know, we lose contact with, the counties or everybody, they're still getting Medi-Cal, so they're still on the C4 database. So they're able to extract that and say, hey, look, these are your 22, 23-year-olds who were not AB12 eligible, and they're still out there because they're out there. They're, like, you know, when I was looking at your graph, that was one of my points. They're out there. We just got to find them. The botch game has changed that now we're going after them where before they were seeking us, you know, in abundance. So that database has helped a lot, and I think there's a third database that they get some of that information from. So, you know, we'll be following up on those names and seeing, you know, if we can find, you know, any more youth with them. And then another thing in relation to the same point with IOP is that you need to find somebody internally who believes in your program. Because if you have people in the county internally who don't really believe in the program, or they don't know the impact that it could have or how much we still need it in a post-AB12 era, it really does impact you, you know. So I think Merced in Spanish laws, we have people inside, you know, now that truly believe it. And it's unfortunate because I feel like we've been able to, you know, nurture that a lot in many ways. But always having somebody that that's really going to fight for you. I know that, you know, Spanner and Merced, we have people internally who get it, who know that this program is still vital. And it's, part of it, it takes kind of education and advocacy because we do talk a lot about there's light at the end of the tunnel with, you know, the county representatives, with the county administrators and the social workers. Like, my two counties are very aware that this is temporary. So it's really important that, you know, we're getting that across to every single one of our counties that may not be as involved with the process and not understand that it's temporary. And then, you know, getting them, one of the other things is getting involved with IOP, with taking on special events with them. You know, we have this thing right now where, in San and in Merced, where we've joined together to work with the housing authorities to get our youth on Section 8 vouchers. That, and we've been successful in that. We get them. We just got 8 this last week, which is our permanent Section 8 vouchers. So that makes our program so much more stronger. So there's more buy-in from the county because they see, like, wow, like the youth that go to their TSP Plus can get a permanent Section 8 voucher. So now it's like it becomes so much more appealing, and, you know, and sought out for, and they'll work with you to try to find some of these youth. Let me see what else I had here. So, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, in terms of working with your IOP and the county, I mean, those are the big things that we're doing. You know, we have an excellent relationship with them that we've been able to nurture with them throughout the years. You know, they're definitely on our side, and they're working with us to try and locate these youth because they understand that they're out there, that they're out there. And then just the second point that I had was, you know, the outreach outside of the county. Although the majority of referrals are coming from the county, we're still doing a lot of outreach with, like, for example, mental health, you know, the colleges, Department of Rehab, you know, we have Turning Point, other FFAs, and one of the big ones is word of mouth. You know, so these youth that you have in the program right now know of other foster youth because they were in the system together, so letting them know, hey, look, we have an opening right now. Do you guys, you know, have an old foster brother or even a sibling that, you know, might be interested in doing this? And they're all connected, you know, through Facebook to whatever it is, and they'll find somebody. Just last week, we got a referral from one of our graduates, you know, who sent over a sibling, you know, and we were like, oh, you know, that's going to help us. And between this week and last week, we've processed, or maybe between the last 3 weeks, we've processed 5 THP Plus intakes, which in a post-AB12 era, it's really, you know, it's really a lot for us. And, you know, kind of something that I want to point out is that I don't want to paint the picture as if, you know, everything is running extremely, that we're not concerned at all. No, definitely the uncertainty really does bug me. And, you know, right now, this far, we managed to, you know, maintain, you know, stay at capacity. But it is always behind my head, like, okay, we have some youth graduating. Right now, we had 3 spots come up. I had 3 people on the wait list, so it took those 3. So now we got to just kind of continue fighting and finding them. And then, you know, I think just the last point that I had was, and Amy already kind of alluded to it a little bit, it's kind of, you know, light. There's light at the end of the tunnel, absolutely. You know, I know Amy mentioned that the first cohort is going to turn 21 in 2015, but you also have those, you know, they were referred to as the bubble youth that were kind of, you know, they turned 18 before January 2012, I believe. Well, those are going to be turning 21 in 2014. I just got the first youth. Merced has a youth that's turning 21 in April of 2014. So we've already started conversations with, okay, so, you know, when can we refer her over to you guys and stuff like that. So I'm assuming that's from my conversation with Simone that those quote-unquote bubble youth are probably a small percentage, but they're out there, you know, and I know that we're already getting one. So we'll see some, in, you know, in 2014 coming in already. And I think that's pretty much all I had. I mean, it's not, you know, no rocket science or nothing like that. It's just really understanding that there's youth out there that, you know, are may or may not know about THP Plus. We just have to find them. And that it takes a lot of, you know, educating and advocacy. We had the opportunity, along with IOP, to go and present to the Board of Commissioners about some of the stuff that we're doing. And they were, you know, extremely supportive, and the word just kind of gets around, you know, this is what they're doing, and then, you know, we hope that those details will help us kind of get through this period that, you know, very, very, very unfortunate because the numbers are, you know, really dropping. And then we're taking it.
Oh, no, go ahead. So there are a few questions, but when you're, please make your point.
We're taking kids from out of county, too, and we've always done that. You know, we've never really initially, but, you know, I think like many providers, or not providers, but like many counties, you know, that prefer to serve their own dependents, are, you know, my two counties that I'm working with are really open-minded when it comes to that. And also not getting too picky, you know, sometimes some of the counties want to serve, you know, the cream of the crop, the ones that are not, you know, that have a really high, you know, prospect for success, but just not getting, you know, extremely picky. I know that we have to find that balance, where especially when we're working with landlords, because landlords are not social workers, so they don't want their property destroyed on their business people they want to rent. So I know we always have to find that balance where, okay, we have somebody that's extremely high need, but, you know, I don't want to burn my bridge with that landlord or whatnot. It's just, you know, in many ways, intensifying your services so that, you know, you're not having somebody rejecting somebody, which is, one, I mean, it's not ethical, and two, you know, you can't afford to do that right now.
Well, this is, I mean, you're bringing up so many good ideas and approaches, and I think your point about, you know, no magic bullet, it takes a range of these approaches to address this. So just lots of kind of questions coming in, and good points, I think. Here is a point that says, what percentage of your youth in THP Plus is Spanish-speaking, and do you think that Spanish-speaking youth is a population that may be falling through the cracks even more than non-Spanish speaking youth?
Yeah, I think I've only had one that I can remember right now that was, you know, their primary language. But absolutely it could be because, you know, that particular, you know, young lady just happened to have a social worker who was, you know, bilingual and can communicate to her about THP and about other stuff. So some of our English-speaking youth don't even understand it when you tell them in English, a little less one that can speak no English. So, I mean, I don't know how much it's affecting, but, you know, definitely, you know, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
We're all bilingual in our staff, so I think that if we, you know, that may help, but really hard to know. I don't see a whole lot of them. I mean, as far as percentage right now, I would probably say right now I don't have any that Spanish-speaking solely.
Well, another is kind of a point that someone, you know, sent in, and maybe you can speak to it, is, you know, traditionally the majority, the vast majority, 80% of referrals have come from dependency and not delinquency, when in fact both categories of youth who age out are eligible for THP+. Have you made new efforts to reach out to juvenile probation? Have you seen any opportunities there?
You know what? I mean, that's an excellent point, and I can't believe I didn't even have it down. That's huge because, yes, you could get referrals from probation. We have a really, really, really close relationship with the probation. They're actually part of our panel when we interview youth, and that's somebody that you would definitely have to target as well because a lot of referrals do come. And I guess when I think of county, in my mind, I think of child welfare and probation, although a lot of the times we only think about child welfare, but that's the relationship you absolutely want to know, because you could get referrals from them. They do have some youth, so that's an excellent point.
Another question is, in your, you know, practice experience, are you seeing any change in the percentage of young parents? And is our young parents, you know, there's certainly a very high need. Are they a group that you're targeting for outreach?
Yes, absolutely. Our parent team has gone up. The youth that we're serving, I think probably half of our youth right now in Merced are parent team. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of awareness in our county with parent team youth. Those are the ones that I feel sometimes people will go a little farther to locate us. And, you know, I just had a meeting with the Department of Public Health because they have parenting programs. And you know, I was thinking, you know what? A lot of our this kind of leads me to a really important point too. I guess that a lot of foster youth, as we know, are parenting when we look at the statistics. So targeting programs in the community that offer parenting resources are another potential avenue. I just met with the Department of Public Health last week, and you know, sure enough, they said, you know what? We do have a lot of foster youth that come through our doors. So, you know, they had one in mind specifically that they were going to be sending over to us. So there definitely are more high need, and you know, I know that when they go and they knock at a door, whether it's the county door or not, people will make an effort to really find us to see what we can do for them. I'm not sure if I answered the question, but
no, absolutely. And you know, raising the point that you have reached out to another county department that is also serving these youth, but kind of looking at them through a different lens, is very valuable. And you know, for young people who are young parents, this program can mean all the difference. So this is so helpful, Luis. I mean, I think your overall message that we are all experiencing this, trying to bring us some creative strategies. And also it seems like your program at Aspirinet is really clear that this change in the referral process is not due to a result of a lack of demand. It seems like that's a message that you're really getting through to your county partners, which is important.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. They have to understand that. Otherwise, you know, you would get discouraged and, you know, and it jeopardizes the program. So, that's the light at the end of the tunnel. That's what, you know, really, really, really is going to help you get through 2014, 2015, that they understand that.
Well, if anyone has any other questions, we've answered a number of them. I guess one last question I'll pose to you, Luis, is do you work with CYC, and do you, you know, reach out to young people at CYC and use their networks to bring older youth or youth into THP Plus who aren't transitioning directly from foster care?
Yeah, you know what? Probably not as much as I would want to, but just yesterday I was at a meeting with the regional director for CYC, and you know, I told him that I want to meet with him. You know, we had a couple things in mind, you know, getting involved in some, but also with the fact that I'm sure that he's connected to a lot of this population. So that's definitely my next, target, you know, CYC, because they are very connected with a lot of the youth, and, you know, they're key players in probably, you know, I don't know how far they are, but I would think they probably have a chapter in most counties. So that's definitely somebody you want in your team. That's something that I'm working on right now to nurture.
Well, great. Well, I'm sure there's, again, we really appreciate you willing to share your experience, and not just on this, but, you know, how Aspirinet, you know, is involved on so many different fronts, on not just THP Plus, but THP Plus foster care and the whole child welfare issue generally. So thank you very much. And someone had emailed in, are these slides going to be available? And we will email them out as we regularly do. And so I'm going to turn the issue a little bit to something we are organizing in December for THP Plus providers. And I know that some of you have gotten an email from Simone or myself. You might have read about this in our newsletter. But we feel like the message isn't quite getting across. So this is a one-day convening that we're holding in December 10th for THP Plus providers. And the goal here really is to develop strategies to sustain local investment in THP Plus. And as you know, as you've heard from us many times, there are tremendous opportunities and potential challenges of 2011 realignment. The opportunity is counties now have discretion to direct more funding, frankly, to THP Plus. And they also have the discretion to direct funding away from it. The challenge here is, you know, THP Plus does not have a federal match. And, you know, in some areas, it could be an attractive program to redirect funds from towards programs like THP Plus Foster Care that have a federal match. And so how can we as a THP Plus community make the most effective case locally to not do that? To say, you know, yes, you might be able to make $1 into two, but there are tens of thousands of young people who desperately still need this program. And so that's what this day is really about, is coming together, hearing how other providers are making this case, what's going on in different areas, because we do know from our annual report that this conversation is happening in counties. Even counties that have a very long-term, long-time commitment to THP Plus are seeing the potential strategic value in moving that money into other programming. So what we don't want to be is flat on our feet when and if that conversation happens in your county. And so this day is an opportunity to really be well-positioned to have your case organized and to be making a proactive effort to prevent that. And again, if we were meeting the need, I'd be the first one to say, let's wrap this thing up and let's, you know, kind of redirect the funds to the greatest need. But that isn't the case, not yet. And so until it is, we want this money to keep going to youth who are aging out of foster care and who have serious housing needs. So what you see on the screen is a list of the workshops that we're going to be offering for the day. They are being conducted by the best and the brightest, I mean a really all-star lineup of people. We're going to start with how much can you advocate? I hear this all the time from providers. We're a nonprofit. We can't do lobbying. We can't do this. The truth is you can, but you need to know how much of it you can. And you also need your board of directors to know how much. So we have a spectacular trainer coming in who's an expert in this, who's going to let us know exactly where that line gets drawn and how you can share that information with your board of directors so that you can have these conversations with confidence. So you're not feeling like, are we doing something wrong? You know exactly where the line is and how you can operate with confidence. The next workshop of the day is going to be about the message. So, you know, we have struggled here at the John Burton Foundation to find a clear, coherent way to explain the changes due to 2011 realignment. And frankly, if you're not in the weeds of child welfare, it's kind of like, what? And as much as we might think our board of supervisors are super knowledgeable about these issues, this is a very, you know, in the weeds type of issue. So the second workshop is going to be really like, how do we develop the message? How do we, in a simple, coherent, and clear way, help people in our county, not just our elected board of supervisors, but other community leaders, understand what's at stake? And leading that is going to be Lori Cappy, absolutely spectacular communications consultant from IE Communications. Then we're going to turn our attention to actually communicating with the public sector. How do we bring this message to our elected officials and to county staff who may not be as familiar with it? We have a lot of incredibly dedicated county representatives, you know, who are very, very engaged in this issue, and there are some that are less engaged. For example, your chief administrative officer of the county is not your program liaison who knows on a very deep basis what's going on. And so this workshop is going to be like how to have this conversation, how to speak the same language, and how to adapt your message based on who you're talking to. Another really important topic that's going to be covered in this one is all of you are contractors, or all the providers are contractors of the county. And it puts you in a very difficult position when you are trying to make this case. And there can be a fear factor. It's like, well, if I stand up, am I going to get knocked down? How can I do this in an appropriate way, in a respectful way that's going to get the results that I want? We're not talking about hunger strikes here. We're talking about a thoughtful, informed dialogue. And so we're really going to get to that issue and talk about this tension as a provider. how you bring forth this message in a way that can be heard and not a turnoff. Next, we're going to look at the facts. What facts do you need to make this case? It's not enough to be the right thing to do. If you go with your sad stories and say kids are going to be homeless, you know, get in line, buddy. There's a lot of needs. There's not enough money, and you need to harness the facts to make a case that this isn't just the right thing to do, it's smart public policy. And then last, the last workshop of the day is really media strategies. How do we proactively use media, whether it be traditional media or new media, to build the level of support for your program in your community? And this is something we all know we're supposed to do, but you know, if you can only do two or three things, you're going to learn about what those are, and you're going to get guidance. And not just guidance like you should do this, but actual templates and actual tools. And so our goal here is we're not going to sit in a conference room for a full day, and you're not going to get talked at. It's going to be a highly interactive, hands-on day where you're going to leave with some very clear direction about how to begin this process of a conversation in your county about sustaining PHP Plus. And so a little bit more information about it. On our website, we have the agenda, the descriptions, the accommodation. On this, there's the registration information. And then we're also offering up to $200 travel for your organization if the travel cost makes it cost prohibitive. We don't have a huge amount of money towards this, but we really believe this is important. You know, realignment puts the fight at the local level, and if we're not educated and empowered to do this work, this program is not going to be around in 5 years. We know that already from the conversations we have the good fortune, frankly, the privilege to be having. And so now is the time where we can make the effort to sustain this important program. So if your organization's in that position, indicate that. We want to get you here. We want to get you part of this conversation. Previously, we did have a limit of, I think it was two people per organization, but we've been able to locate a larger space, and we are now able, you're able to bring more than two people per organization. So that's my pitch. That's my hardcore pitch for this day. This is very different than institutes we've held in the past In the past, they've been more practice-focused, and this one is advocacy-focused. And many of you may be saying, I'm a practitioner. I'm not an advocate. Well, the days of getting to just be one of those are over, at least for this program. It's finding some way, some sliver of resource within your organization to engage on this level is going to be critical. It doesn't mean it's what you're going to be doing full-time, but at least it know if I can only do two or three things, these are the things that I have to do. Simone is reminding me that we want to encourage people to come from each location. So, for example, in Espiranet, which is in many different counties, we are encouraging people from each county to come. So it isn't two people per organization; it's two people per program location. All right, so if you have any questions about that day, please send them in, and we're happy to answer them. But we really hope we, as a result of this, see some people register. We really want to hold this day, but we're not seeing the level of urgency in the community that we should based on the number of counties that are reducing their THP Plus capacity. And so, again, if we don't want 1 year from now to be saying, wow, we've lost 500 beds of THP Plus, the time is now to pull together, come together, discuss this collectively, and develop our skills to have those conversations locally. So from here, and I'm sorry if I'm pouring it on a little thick. I can do that sometimes. But I want to know that nothing was left on the table. And so thank you for indulging me in that. Simone wants to add something.
Talking about pouring it on thick, I'm just going to add kind of the icing on the cake here. I just want to make the point that, you know, John Burton Foundation, we did used to advocate at the state level for THP Plus because that was where it was. And of course, we still do. But now now the advocacy has really been pushed to obviously the county level because of realignment. And, you know, it's just Amy and I here in the office. John Burton Foundation is very small, and as far as the policy side of THP Plus goes, it's really the two of us doing this work. And so, you know, we can't possibly go to every county and attend every, you know, Board of Supervisors meeting and provide that type of support. And so this is what we are able to do. And the advocacy is really in the hands of the providers now. So we really just want to make sure that this opportunity doesn't pass people by. And so that's kind of just the point that I wanted to make.
Thanks, Simone. So with that, we'll just touch on a few last things. One is we do have a web seminar on November 21st on probation youth. This could be a great opportunity for those of you who are not as familiar with the probation system. Here in California, we fund youth and juvenile probation with foster care money. They're equally entitled to extended foster care, and they are equally entitled to THP Plus. So while their experience may be different, their eligibility is not. And so it's really important we embrace those young people who have a lot to benefit from these programs. And then finally, we are not going to have a call in December because we're going to replace it with the Advocacy Institute. So we hope we see many of you here. We will shoot out this PowerPoint momentarily, so the registration link you'll be able to get in that email. And just want to, again, thank Luis and Espirinet, and thank all of you for being on our conference call today. There were some kind of questions that were raised that weren't central to this conversation, so we will make sure to follow up and answer those so we didn't forget about you. So on behalf of the John Burton Foundation, thanks again for participating today, and we hope to see many, if not most of you, in December at the Institute in Oakland. Have a good day.